above anything else that's been created, we are specifically created in the image of him. And so we see all these other life forms. I'll give some examples. Just life forms. You see them all of the time. But we alone are the ones that are said to be in God's image. We are different, unique, in fact, kind of special in comparison to all other forms of life. We are classified by God in his kind of biological order as a special amongst every single other piece of creation. Why? Why in Genesis 1 does he close the thing with us? He says, you, humans, you're super, super, super important. You hold a really special place above everything else in the entire universe. You are eternally significant to me. But why? It's almost like we have a picture of this thing. This is kind of how we see it. Genesis 1 is written, and it's as if God is creating everything. And as he's creating things, he's writing this down. Now, some people have different views of how God creates things. I don't really care about that stuff. I never have. I always care about the who, not the how. So however you think all this came about, doesn't really bother me. But however he did it, we have this thought that somehow he's writing it down. Like, oh, I'm going to throw some stars up into the sky. God threw stars in the sky. I'm going to make some really cool whales. Boom, make some whales. I made fish in the sea. And this is kind of this picture sometimes of like, well, how did this all come about? Because the Bible is a very literary book. It matters to see it as literature. As I've said many times, it also matters to see it as a pre-Enlightenment book. What I mean is there's no scientific method that the Bible is written through. Nobody sat there and went like, well, 7,000 years from now, here's how they're going to read it, so I better put these things in. They're like, no, we're going to write it as we know how to write it. But these words were not written at the moment that whatever happened, happened. The creation story in Genesis 1 is just a piece of poetry. Go read Genesis 1 today, the full thing. I actually kind of thought about having Kay read the whole thing. I was like, it's long. Read the whole thing. And I encourage you to just kind of read it as literature. And I'll encourage you to do one more thing with it. Read it out loud. Don't just read it to yourself. Go home. Grab a Bible if you have it. I'd rather you didn't just look at it on your phone. So if you don't have a Bible, we've got free Bibles back there. Grab that. Go home. Open Genesis 1. I promise you, it's real easy to find right at the beginning. And read it out loud. And read it as poetry. As these words, these poetic words of something much more important than figuring out how creation happened, but a story we're supposed to find ourselves in. And we see that in this origin story, it's actually a story about how we're supposed to be living. The book of Genesis was written at this massively pivotal time in Israelite history. Genesis is given to Moses right around 1400 BC. Now, this is significant, because this is right when the Israelites had left Egypt and were wandering in the desert for 40 years to get to the Promised Land. So they're in the desert for 40 years. And it is during this time that they get what's called the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, including Genesis. And God gives this to them, I think, as a gift so they can go, hey, I know things are difficult right now. You were in slavery. And now you think this was going to be better, and now you're wandering in a desert, not knowing where you belong, and you have some hope for the future, but I'm going to give you your place in the story. Before this, I said God's people had been enslaved in Egypt. No freedom. They cry out to God, and they say, God, deliver us. And so God sends Moses to Pharaoh, and through a series of events that you can read right at the beginning of Exodus, through these series of events, the Israelites are let go, let to be free, and they go through this desert experience. 40 years until they're able to enter the Promised Land, what we know as Israel. And as they walk through the kingdoms and the lands, they have this very weird way in which they progress to the Promised Land. It's not a straight line. And they go through lots of different kingdoms, lots of different lands, lots of different places where there are rulers. And as they're walking through this desert and they're just going through land after land, and basically this province and this province, and this is who it belongs to, they see something familiar. Here's what they see. Statues. Lots of statues. Many of these still remain. You can still see these in different museums. These are statues that were put up all throughout the ancient world. So what were these statues? Because they look like people. What were they? Well, kings of whatever little, you know, place they had or large territory they had, they would leave statues in a place where they ruled because they could not be there and they wanted people to know, this is mine. This belongs to me. This is why, if any of you have ever gone to my house, I have a massive statue of myself right at the front. Yeah, and you just walk in. It's like, oh, that's Michael's. That's kind of what they did. I mean, think about it. If, you know, you had a little statue on your car to show that it's yours, you had a little statue wherever you live as people come in, you're like, this is mine. That's what these kings and rulers would do. And it was really kind of fascinating because at every port of entry into a land, instead of having a flag like you would often see, their borders showed a statue. And it was the image of that ruler of that area, and not just at the border. You'd see it as you entered into towns and villages. Sometimes you go get water at a water well, boom, there's a big statue of the ruler of the land. And again, these statues looked like them. And it was basically them saying this, this is my kingdom, and I'm sticking this statue here to prove it to you. Do not get any ideas. It belongs to me. Now, this was not an unfamiliar thing to the Israelites. They had spent 400 years in Egypt, and they saw tons of these statues, tons of them. They were everywhere. The Great Sphinx, which was built approximately 1,000 years before Genesis is written, just so you can kind of get a historical survey of what's going on, the Great Sphinx is just one of hundreds, if not thousands, of these images that the Pharaoh would use to mark his land. This is mine. This belongs to me. The Israelites would see these statues every day. It's probably later what led them to make a golden calf. If you don't know that story, I won't go into it too much, but they're wandering through this desert, and they're like, we don't have any statues. We want a statue. So they actually get all this gold together, and they make a golden calf because they want a statue. In fact, I think they probably had plans to put statues in the Promised Land at some point. They wanted something in which they could say, yes, this is ours. That makes sense to me. That's what people would normally do. The king's not present. The image is the representation of him, a reminder who's actually king of the area. So when the Israelites are given Genesis 1 during this time, this poetry, and they start reading it aloud, because that's what they did. They read it aloud to each other. They're looking for hope as they're wandering. And they come across that section. And God said, hey, we've made a whole lot of things. We've created a ton of cool stuff. But now let's us, the Trinitarian God, let's put our capstone on this thing. Let's make mankind in our image, in our likeness. And so God creates mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. The word for image, by the way, tselem, image, likeness, but also representation, specifically a statue. That's the Hebrew word. That's the purposeful Hebrew word. Okay, now this starts to get super cool. I want you to put yourself in the place of an Israelite wandering the desert. 40 years. They're like, oh, we got out of slavery. Everything's going to be great. Oh, this is our reward. And they get the Pentateuch. And they open it right up to the beginning. And they start to read. I've made you in my image. I've created you in my image. In my image, You have all been created. They remember the massive statues of the pharaohs that said, "This is my kingdom because you see my images." And now they're seeing all these other statues in every land they pass through, which is the same thing. This is my kingdom because you see my images. And now God informs them, everything's my kingdom. Everything. Everywhere you walk's my kingdom. When you were in Egypt, that's mine. When you look up at the stars, that's mine. This desert, mine. The wilderness, mine. The promised land, mine. Everything belongs to me. And I don't have inanimate statues. You are the statues. I do not need to put things anywhere to show people and prove anything about myself, God said. I got you. You're the statues, you're the representatives. You are the image of God. We are not inanimate objects. You are not some inanimate object just here. You are a representation every moment of every day of your life of God. That's what you do, that's what you're supposed to do. And what's really amazing is we don't just sit at a border, look around. We move and we talk and we walk and we make decisions, and it's breathtaking what we're able to do as God's representatives. God says that because you are in this image, never ever think of yourself as a random thing. Never ever think of yourself as being like carved from marble and just stuck somewhere, carved from stone and just stuck somewhere. You are not random. You were created out of divine intent. You were woven into existence by the relational God himself. You represent God in how you live. You represent God in the words you say. You represent God in the way you think about people, think about yourself. You represent God in the decisions you make. You represent God when you have difficult problems and you choose to go, I can handle this alongside God. I will represent him well. You represent God when you're walking in your own wilderness. You represent God anytime you do anything creative. You represent God everywhere at all times. You are God's walking image, walking representation, walking statue. I said this is breathtaking because it really changes everything in how we start to live in God's presence. First and foremost, I start to see that I have inherent value. It's just built into me. You do not have value because of what you do or some special thing that you have a skill at or an ability. You have value because you're God's child. He created you. You represent him. You're a really big deal to him. After each day that God created something new, by the way, every time he's like stars and whales and all the things. So he creates it all. He go, ooh, that's good. Give himself a little compliment. It's great. Ooh, I like that one. That's really good. Ooh, look at that Milky Way. Good, 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 good. And he just talks about all the things he made. Good, 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 good. And then he gets to us. The capstone, the apex of creation. He's made everything. He looks at us on that final day, the final creative ability of God, and he says, it was very good. He just adds that little bit. Yeah, you're good. No, you're not good. You're very good. You are really special. Your value is so beyond what you think. And I get that you may be sitting there and going, oh, but there's so much evil in the world, or I have evil in my heart, or I've done this or this. And I'm going to go, yeah, we can get to Genesis 3. We can talk about that. It all gets broken. I get that. But just stay here for a little bit. This is God's intention for you. Good. Very good. You have inherent value. Just this week, my wife and I, we were walking And we stopped and looked at a sunset. I'm sure many of you do the same thing around this time of year. It's just so beautiful when you get to kind of see a clear day, a really clear day. And it was one of those perfect sunsets. We were just kind of looking at it, staring at it. There's the layers of the mountains as they're just kind of stretching far and deep. And then there's those kind of beautiful billowing clouds nestled right behind. And the sun's kind of right behind them, poking through at times. But no matter what, you're just seeing these massive sunshine rays coming out from the clouds, just popping through everywhere. And so the whole mountain range was just lit up. It was just one of those kind of stunning. It's like, why would you live anywhere else? That's what I always say. But I'm like, oh my goodness, that is just beautiful. And I remember just being caught with a sense of awe, but I was also having in the back of my mind the teaching for today. And I'm processing that as well. And I'm just sitting there going, wow, God thinks I am more special than that. God finds me more beautiful than that. Somehow God thinks I'm more impressive than that. And maybe the little spits of self-pity that come out in me should go away. Maybe the worries about the future all the time should go away. Maybe me constantly thinking about myself and what anybody else might think of me, maybe that should all go away for all of us. And we should just see ourselves as God sees us. Very good. Made with intrinsic dignity. That your image is not based on wealth or race or age or ability or status. It is given by God to everyone. And boy, this changes how we start to realize that everybody's created like this. Man, it's really hard to be a negative person. Most negativity is about other people, by the way. Sure, sometimes it's about us. We don't like things about ourselves, but usually it's something's happened, or we don't like how other people live or act or do things or what they say, and we get negative. And we basically say to God, I don't really love the statue you've made with me, but I really don't like that statue. If I could do anything, I'd just take a hammer and I'd just crush that statue down. But I can't do that, so I'll do it in my heart a little bit. And man, it becomes a very big swirl of negativity. And there's no healing in that. There's no help in that. Because when I see the value God has put into me, when I actually go, oh, wait, at my core, God has wanted to make me very good, I desire to push for good in my little corner of the world. And it doesn't mean there's not problems or negative situations or even negative outcomes. Yeah, that's just part of living in the world. A few days ago, I had a guy just basically give me his list of all the bad things that had happened in the last 2 years. And as he was doing it, he was like, can you see how bad it is? I didn't say his name, but in my head, I was like, yeah, kind of. Do you want to see my list? I don't share my list with everyone, but do you want to see it? You want to see everybody's list in here? Everybody's got a list. We all have these lists. All the negative things, all the negative people, all the problems. Yep. But if that's my focus, I become negative. I do not believe God wants us to enter the future each and every day thinking negatively about the world in which he has placed us. This goes against the image-bearing responsibility he has given you. Because I'm not just optimistic with a false hope. If you know me very well, I am unrelentingly optimistic. Not because of me, not because of you, not because of something that could go on in the world, because of God. I believe there is always hope when I have confidence, when I have trust in a God who is in ultimate control. And then I get to do what God has put me on this earth to do. You represent. You represent God in how you do everything in life. This entire world, it is his kingdom. Where you're sitting right now, his kingdom belongs to him. He has put you here to be an image bearer, to be the living statue. And it is your official job in this world. This is what you're supposed to be doing. And so I don't know what you do or don't like in the world or about you or yourself or the life in which you're living, but at your core, this you can do no matter what. You can be a really good image bearer in how you live. And so I'm going to ask a simple question. How are you doing at representing? How positive are you? How are things going at your home, whatever that looks like? How are things with your immediate family? How are you doing and representing? How about with your extended family? The people that may be really difficult. How are you doing? How's the image of God being shown in you? How about your friends? How many of your friends actually even know how important God is to you and your faith is to you? How many of your friends actually know that this is actually a big deal? That unlike the majority of the culture, you take time out of your week to come and find your faith deeper and deeper. How are you representing with your enemies? God tells us, Jesus tells us in Matthew, the enemies are just as important as the friends. How we handle the people that we think are bad matters. It's a really big deal to Jesus, in fact. How do you represent at work or at school? What are people seeing? Maybe when you're around neighbors or even strangers. What would it look like to take the image-bearing responsibility really seriously? That this is my job in this world to represent really well. As I invite Josh to come back up and to lead us in worship, as we start to kind of process going to the Eucharist table to meet with Christ, we take this living in God's presence idea very seriously. We actually want to go and take God's presence with us at the Eucharist table. We want to take seriously our responsibility as representatives. So take a few moments with me. Just maybe bow your heads or whatever gets you into prayerful state. Maybe take some deep breaths in and let them out. Just slow your heartbeat a little bit. Slowly let your mind focus on God. If you'd like to make it a body prayer, which I always think is helpful, you can just take your hands, your palms, and put them up. It's just an idea of surrender to the control of God. You can set them on your lap, or you can keep them up. Whatever's comfortable, just to kind of get yourself in this space. And spend some time asking God to provide space for you to be more and more of an image. And I'll just go through those few ideas, and you can kind of maybe pray over each one. Look at, you know, that first one, your value. If you're struggling to see yourself as valuable, ask God to provide you maybe more insight into how worthy you actually are. Maybe even ask God to bring people into your life. And maybe I was one of those today, hopefully, just a little bit, to remind you of your inherent worth as an image bearer of the great King of this world. So just take a moment. Ask God to provide more insight into your value, a true identity as a Christ follower. Now just kind of think of that next one. Is it hard for you to be positive? To be optimistic, which really is just another word for hope? Do you let negativity take over your heart and your thinking too often? Do you focus on the problems and the things that don't work? And maybe for you, maybe you even lost hope a little bit. So just take a moment and ask God to let you more fully realize His image in you and how hopeful that can be, no matter the circumstances. And that you know that God is unrelentingly optimistic and you would like Him to put that in you more and more. Just take a moment and do that. Finally, as we go to the table and stay in a place of prayer, think about how you're representing. Again, don't sit in a place of guilt or regret as much as a place of nostalgia. Has there been a time when you represented well? Are there some places in your life where you're not living up to that right now? Some people, some situations. Whether it's home or family, friends, or even strangers, tell God you'd like His image to be seen in you more and more, that you want to represent God well. When you're ready, I encourage you to go respond to God at the table. As we do every week, the tables are to your left and right, and the tables represent grace. They represent a love for you that will not end, that will not fail. And so go and take the bread, dip it into the wine, and bring it into your body. And I will pray for us as we go to the table. Lord, I just thank You so much for creating us in Your image. Help us, God, to see, just to see our worth, to see our value, to see how You're actually working in the world in positive ways, and that it will now reflect in us and off of us to others. That Your love, Your creativity, everything about You starts to pour out of us in all we do, in all our interactions, that our thought processes start to change, that our love for others starts to change, and that by Your Spirit, God, You restore in us that beauty of Your image. You said is very good. It's in Your name, Christ, we pray these things. Amen. Tables are open.